And in Mark Connolly's absence tonight, I have the privilege of introducing to you a special guest that we have, Richard Gotthardt. He is with us tonight, and he is from Grace Community Church. He was on staff there for 17 years, and there he spent his time being a teaching pastor, also a pastor of spiritual formation, and he said he spent most of his time working with the college and young adults, and he recently is just now starting the venture of a brand new church that maybe he can fill us in a little bit about that's here in Mesa and Chandler. If you could welcome Richard. He'll be with us tonight.
Thank you. It is, it's really great to be here. I'm just honored to be invited. And I've got to visit Superstition Springs a couple times in the last few months. I've been in kind of a transition place myself. And so got to visit some other churches. And just what a great church this is. If you're new here, you know, stick around. And if you've been here, stick around, but if it, you know, you already know it's a great place, and there's just great people around you, and I am excited. I'm getting ready to start a church that's actually just starting has asked me to come lead it, and I'm really excited about that. It's called Life Spring Community Church, so that's pretty cool. But I want to talk to you tonight about the Jesus story that I got asked to talk about, and I'm really excited about this story. But to do it, we got to start by kind of setting this in context a little bit. I want you to, first of all, to do this, I want you to picture a party. Now, a real party. I'm not talking about a lame party. You know, you've been to lame parties. And a lame party is where people just stand around holding their drink and trying to act sophisticated or whatever. And I can't even say the word. But they're just kind of standing there, and it's really quiet, and it's kind of boring. Not that kind of party. I'm talking about a party. You know what I'm talking about, right? There's some music playing. There's energy in the room. It's a happening place. People are laughing. They're having a good time. Somebody probably gets thrown in the pool. Who knows? It's happening, right? It's a real party, okay? You got that picture in your head? Now, I want you to do something. I want you to picture Jesus walking in the front door to that party. Now, if you're like most folks that I've talked to, something suddenly came to a screeching halt in your mental picture, right? Because you just can't do it. Now, one, you've got Jesus all dressed in a robe and stuff, and it's like, that's really weird. You know, this robed guy walks in, and you imagine, can you imagine in a movie how it would play out would be like this, right? That there'd be this great party happening, and then the door would open, Jesus would walk through, and suddenly, you know how like the needle would screech across the record. It would suddenly come to a crashing halt. Everyone would suddenly start looking down and looking awkward, kind of, you know, doing that. No one would make eye contact with Jesus because they would just feel really bad for something. It's kind of like how I get sometimes, or how I feel when I'm out getting my hair cut or doing something like that, and people say, "Oh, so what do you do?" And I've almost got to the point where I don't even like telling people. I'm not ashamed of being a follower of Jesus or anything like that. But when I say to people, and it's a very predictable response. I say to people, "Well, I'm a pastor." And I literally, almost always, people do, "Oh." And then the next thing they do is they start apologizing. "Oh, I'm sorry. What did I just say? You know, and what were we just talking about?" And it's funny, I was a normal person till just that moment. And then suddenly, or at least I hope I was, and then suddenly it's like, oh, and I think a lot of people have that mental picture of Jesus. That if a really good time is breaking out, if you want to kill it, just invite Jesus to the party. You know, and he'll be sure to drain all the fun out of the pool. But that's what I want to say to you today, and I know it's going to take a little undoing in our minds. We've got to kind of roll back the ideas that we've got about who Jesus really is and what he's really like. Somehow we've gotten sold basically a lie, and that is that Jesus doesn't know how to have a good time. And he's pretty much opposed to anybody that is trying to have a good time. And that if you really want to be a really spiritual person, then what you act like is very serious and very pious and very proper. And yet, the reality is, as we look into tonight's account of the Jesus story we're going to look at, is it's set at a party. And it's a party that Jesus was, well, he's comfortable because Jesus was really comfortable at parties. If you read through the Gospels, the first four books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, You know what? Jesus, more often than not, you'll find him at a party. In fact, so much so that the religious people of Jesus' day didn't know what to do with Jesus, and they didn't like him. In fact, they called him, one of their nicknames for him was, he's a glutton and a drunkard. Now, how's that for a religious person? It's like, well, Jesus, you aren't doing very good image management. They're calling you a drunk and a glutton. You might want to kind of start hanging out in a different place. And that's not how Jesus acted. He was so comfortable being at real parties. I mean, raucous parties where the wine was flowing, where the food was feast level, where people were, you know, not just being prim and proper. Jesus was so comfortable at those kind of parties that he got tagged drunk, glutton. Well, the party that Jesus is at today that we're going to look at, that this Jesus story emerges from, we find this is a little different kind of party, and Jesus is going to shake it up. In this one, Jesus truly is the party crasher. And so if you have a Bible, and I understand that if you don't have one, we'd love to provide one for you, and there are the people that would love to do that. So if you didn't bring a Bible, that's great. Just throw your hand up. Someone will put one in your hand. So just throw your hand up if you need one. We're in Luke today, in Luke chapter 14. And that's the third book in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke. And that's where we're going to be in tonight's Jesus story. And Jesus is at a party. But this time, Jesus, this is a party at the home of a religious leader, a Pharisee. And Jesus ends up playing the part of the, and I'm kind of an Arnold Schwarzenegger guy. I love Arnold Schwarzenegger, and one of my favorite movies of his is Kindergarten Cop. And he does a few things in that, there's just a few lines in that I love. It's like he just, but one of them is he comes crashing into this party, and he's got a shotgun. That's how he ends up getting at this party. Jesus doesn't do that. They didn't have shotguns yet. But he comes into this one, and it's like, you know, they say, who are you anyways? I'm the party pooper. And that's what Jesus is going to do tonight. He's going to create some awkward moments. Okay, so we're in Luke 14. And the first verse, it says, one Sabbath, Jesus went to eat in the house of a prominent Pharisee. He's being carefully watched. This is not a casual social occasion. This is a party in the home of a religious leader, a Pharisee, and by this time they already dislike Jesus intensely. He didn't fit into their picture of what a religious person was supposed to do and say and act like, and so this was actually kind of a setup. And even furthermore, it's actually on a Sabbath, and a Sabbath was a big rule day for religious people, particularly if you were a Pharisee. They had 600 and some rules around what you could and could not do on the Sabbath. One of those, I'll just give you an example. I mean, they got so absurd, and these weren't in the Bible kind of rules. These were rules that they had made up to try, in their mind, protect the holiness and sanctity of this day. And so one of those rules was actually you could not spit on the Sabbath, on the certain day of the week. Now, it's not Sunday, just the Sabbath day. We're actually coming to the end of the Sabbath in the Jewish week, so Friday night to Saturday night, sundown to sundown. But you couldn't spit. You know, why not? Because it's gross? No. You couldn't spit because if you spit in the dirt, it could cause the dirt to move a little bit, and if the dirt moved a little bit, that could be considered plowing. Then you go, wow. Somebody had way too much time on their hands to come up with rules like that. They did, and they had lots, lots more. They had exact measurements of how far you could walk and no further and all that kind of stuff. And Jesus, this was one of the issues that Jesus seemed to love to just sort of take the Pharisees' ideas of what God was like and what God really wanted. He liked to just sort of twist them. So Jesus knows he's being watched. He knows he's under the microscope here. He walks into this party, and notice what happens. In front of him was a man suffering from dropsy. Now, we don't use that word. I think that was the name of one of the rabbits in Peter Cottontail, dropsy. But, sorry, I don't know. I go off sometimes, and I'll try and keep coming back. But dropsy, I didn't know what that was. Anybody, I looked it up a little bit because that's not a word we use a lot. You know, my kid came down with dropsy. Oh no, what is that? I don't know, but it sounds bad. It's edema would be a term we would use today. I again looked this up, and so swollenness in their arms and legs. It was a circulatory disorder. Anyway, so kind of gross looking, I guess. I don't know how else to say it. And this person is at the party. Now, first of all, they were not most likely an invited guest. Because, see, if you're really a prim and proper religious person, you don't associate with people that are undesirable in the society. And that was certainly this guy. But see, in Jesus' day, Jesus went around healing so many people that were sick and needed to get well, they knew where to go. And that was often to hang around Jesus. Not only did he say amazing things, he did amazing things. So this person shows up, and I'm sure until Jesus gets there, they are an unwelcome guest at this party. Because even further, the religious people in Jesus' day assumed that if you were sick and you were sick for a long time, you must have done something wrong. So, you know, you must have ticked God off or had sin in your life or something. So some people actually kind of think that way today. But Jesus walks into this party, and Jesus asks the Pharisees and experts in the law, and before he does anything, he sees this guy, and Jesus has this way. He walks into a room, and the first thing he notices is not all eyes staring at him and the religious people and, you know, with their, okay, we got him now kind of look. The first thing Jesus does is he notices the person in need and hurting. And that's a great question for you, by the way. When you walk into a room, when you walk into a place, when you're at a social gathering, what's the first thing you notice? Do you notice the person that's hurting, the person that's troubled, the person that's, and you know, and they may not always be the most socially attractive, if you will, and yet Jesus sees them, and he decides it's kind of time to make a point. He did that a lot, so he just sees this person, and then he turns straight to the Pharisees and say, is it lawful to heal on a Sabbath or not? But they remain silent. And Jesus is, at this point, ticked. He's mad. Because they don't care about this guy. They don't care about all. They're just trying to get Jesus in trouble. They remain silent. So taking hold of the man, again, violated custom, Jesus did. You don't touch people that are sick because that's sort of ceremonially unclean. But he grabs hold of him, it says, and touches him and heals him and sends him on his way. And then he says, come on. That's just my paraphrase of what he's about to say. Come on, what is the matter with you people? And notice his words in verse 5. He asks them, if one of you has a son or an ox, even an animal, that falls into a well on the Sabbath day, will you not immediately pull him out? And they had nothing to say because they knew the truth. Of course you would. Imagine that. Your kid falls in the pool. They're like, you know, Bobby, I'd really love to get you out. I would. I mean, I see you're struggling there, but, well, it's Sunday, buddy. You know, and we don't swim on Sunday, and you shouldn't be in the pool. So if you can get to the step, that'll be great. Otherwise, I'll talk to you tomorrow. And, you know, and Jesus is like, are you kidding me? But that's how ridiculous it had gotten. Awkward moment number one. Jesus is, and he's done it on purpose. You know, Jesus is really comfortable at social gatherings in which people are partying. People that are far from God are having a really good time. This one, Jesus is now creating an awkward moment, and he's doing it on purpose. So awkward moment number one, heals the guy, and he makes a point about it. Second, he notices how the guests pick places of honor at the table, and so he tells them, hey, here's my sort of party directions for you. When you go to a social gathering, instead of trying to, you know, navigate to get the best seat in the house, don't do that. My suggestion to you is you actually sit at the lower end of the table, if you will, or at the place that's less desirable, and then see, this will be a good party strategy. Then the person that knows you will say, oh no, come over here. And see, you'll be honored instead of, you know, what if you kind of decide to try and work your way into the in crowd and then you have to kind of get kicked out. And so, you know, what is that all about? Well, Jesus is simply telling people, if you try and make yourself somebody and try and force your reputation to advance somehow, that's not going to work well. Instead, just trust yourself to God. Trust yourself that you'll be secure in who you are in God and you'll be okay. Well, awkward moment number two. Because not only has he come in and healed somebody and kind of told off the Pharisees, and he's in the house of a Pharisee. So, you know, one of the first things you do when you come to the home of a, you know, somebody who's throwing a party, you want to insult the host, right? Just come on in and say, hey, who painted this place? You know, and did you decorate it? But Jesus immediately does that, and then immediately starts telling the guests how they should conduct themselves. And so now, awkward moment number two, he's now told everybody the way you're kind of conducting yourselves, it's kind of ugly because everybody's kind of trying to climb the social ladder here. And he's saying you're missing the point of it all. And so now awkward moment number two. And so imagine, so that's the setting for the story that Jesus is about to tell. It is, you know, so imagine how awkward. It is completely silent in this house now. I mean, you know, he's healed this guy. People are upset. He's at one level sort of insulted all the guests. And so somebody, some brave soul, I love this. It's actually kind of comical. I wish I could see this one. And when we get to heaven, I guess we'll get to see this kind of played out on the video screens in heaven or something. Because in this really awkward, silent moment, you ever been there? You ever been there where it's like no one knows what to say, no one knows what to do. And you know, when you're at a religious home, if you don't know what else to do, say something religious. So that's exactly what happens. When, you know, Jesus, verse 15, it's really, really quiet. Imagine it. So it's really quiet. Everybody's staring at each other. They're staring at Jesus, looking down. And then somebody says, blessed is a man who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. That sounds religious. And they're just, you can just tell in the room, they just want it to, you know, okay, can we just eat the meal and could Jesus be quiet for a while? And Jesus now creates awkward moment number three. And he tells a story. And that brings us to the story that Jesus is going to tell. And he tells a story, since they're at a party, he tells a story of a really great party. So now we're at in Luke 14, verse 16. So a lot of background, but I wanted you to enter into the moment and imagine yourself at that party as Jesus is now about to tell these people that there is a party they're invited to, and it's the best party possible, and they are invited, but he's, well, just notice the story. In verse 16, he said, well, here's the deal. There's a certain man who's preparing a great banquet, and he invited many guests. Well, first, I just need to stop for a second and tell you, party invitations worked a little different in that day than they work today. So this will help you make sense of the story. In that day, you kind of had a two-part invitation. Part one was, it was kind of like what we do now. You get these things now, it's popular for a wedding invitation, you get the save the date thing. Anybody gotten one of those? Save the date. So like somebody's like, you know, we know how busy everyone is, so you send it out 6 months in advance. It's on your refrigerator. Save the date, October 16th. Don't make any other plans. This is our wedding day, so that, you know, people the day before don't come up to you and say something lame like, oh, is your wedding tomorrow? And so, you know, this is what that was. That was part one. Way out ahead, you told people, save the date. I'm throwing this bash. It's going to be great. You don't want to miss it. I mean, it's going to be a raging party. So it's good, and I'm pulling out all the stops. It's going to be a great party. And then, well, right before the party was about to start in this community, the host of the party would send out a messenger. And they would tell all the people around the town that were invited, and apparently a lot of folks were invited to this party. They would say, okay, time. It's, you know, here we are, October 16th, 4 p.m. Come on over. Come on over. Party's about to start. That's what's happening right here. So at the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who have been invited, come, for everything is now ready. Okay, invitation part two. Let's go. Party's about to start. Notice what happens. Verse 18. But it says, but they all alike began to make excuses. And it gives us three examples of the excuses people use. The first said, I just bought a field and I must go see it. Please excuse me. The second said, another said, I just bought a 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another one said, I just got married, so I can't come. Let's stop right there for a second. Now, if you're listening to this story in Jesus' day, what you would have probably been thinking at this point is, what? What? I mean, because the feast he's describing, I mean, he's talking about someone who was apparently very wealthy, who had apparently a reputation as a really good party thrower. You know, there's certain people that, you know, God bless them, and they love people, and they want to throw a good party, but you just know that if you go to their party, it's not going to be a great party. And then, you know, this is, I noticed this already with my kids growing up. I've got eight, 11, and 13-year-old kids. And they're already at the age when they get a party invitation. What's the first question when you're a kid? And even now you ask when you're deciding whether to go to the party, what do you ask? Who else is going to be there? Who else is going to be there, right? And now I noticed, and anybody got an Evite invitation yet? Anybody got one of those? You know what I'm talking about? It's on online. And they realize that that's human nature. And so what they do now is they tell you, this is who else is going to be there. It's safe to come, you know, so you can go. And now, so this person throwing this party, they would have sent out the, you know, the real party invitation. And this would have been a real good party. This isn't a lame event. But what is incredible to me, and I think it was incredible to Jesus' hearers, as he tells the story, is the excuses that are being used. So this is what they are. The first excuse is what? He said, I just bought a field. Well, first of all, if you bought a field, that would have been like, you know, buying a second home or a bit of a huge purchase. And he said, I need to check it out. Do you think he hadn't checked it out already? You know, do you ever bought a house sight unseen? You ever done that? I trust you. You know, Bob, just, I know, as long as it's got 3 bedrooms and a bathroom, I'm good. I'm good. So, of course, he had already checked it out. What a dumb excuse. You know, you're like, wow, that's your excuse? I need to go see your field again? What do you think changed about your piece of dirt? You know, well, it got even more full of dirt since we last looked. It's weird. So that's weird. So that's a lame excuse. The second one. I just bought 5 yoke of oxen. Now, a yoke would have been 2 oxen. So this would have been a huge investment. 10 oxen. I've never bought. Anybody here ever bought oxen before? I don't know, not our deal. But it would be like if you had bought a brand new Cadillac. Huge investment. 20,000 pounds of beef. You know, this is a lot of animals. And he said, I need to go try them out. Really? You ever bought a brand new car and never test drove it? Of course, they had already tried them out. This was not new. So it's a really lame sounding excuse. The last one, though, is perhaps my favorite. He said, because I mean, if you're trying to ditch a party, you would think it's like these people got caught unawares and they came up with the lamest excuses they could think of. The very first thing that popped into their head. I just got married. Oh, okay. So parties are out, huh? The missus doesn't like you going to parties. She's invited too. She's not such a partier. Doesn't like it. And we just, you know, we're thinking of just going home and staring at each other for a while. And it's just really, really strange. So if you're one of these people and you're saying, what is wrong with these people? If you read these excuses and you think that is really lame, then you're right. You're getting the point that Jesus is trying to make. The people hearing the story would have been incredulous that people would have been invited to a really great feast and they would have come up with such lame excuses. It would make you think, what is going on? And the story goes on to say that he goes, the host is upset and he decides to invite other people. And we'll get to that part later. But I want to just stop for a second and I want to kind of say, what's the point of the story? See, Jesus' stories, his parables, they're alike in this. They usually have just kind of one main point, one big idea. And so they usually it's something that represents something else. And so we don't want to go so far and try and make up a bunch of other stuff. Well, I wonder who the person that was just married represents. Does that represent some other weird thing? No, just here's the main idea. And here it is. You and I are being invited to a party, a feast, a banquet that will satisfy our deepest longings and our greatest desires. You and I are being invited. You are even now being invited to a party, a feast, a banquet, one that will satisfy your deepest longings and your greatest desires. That was true of the people listening to the story in Jesus' day, and it is no less true today. You're being invited. Jesus is throwing a party, and he is sending you and has sent you an invitation. You're invited to this party. He refers to the people in his day, and he talks about the people in the town, and really the message would have been everyone was invited. Everyone that this person knew was invited. And just to, that would have brought to mind if they were, the religious leaders would have been paying attention, and they would have known these verses out of Isaiah 55. And I want you to hear, because this invitation, it's really just as much today, it's as relevant today as it ever was, and it's to you. Here it is, Isaiah 55. And God is saying these words. He says, "Come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters. All you have no money, come, buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Because, you know, why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen, listen to me and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest affair." What is this feast? What is this party that Jesus is talking about? What is it that he's inviting people to? Because it's obviously a whole lot more than just food. It's a whole lot more than just a meal and a social gathering. You know that, right? I just came back from a 3-week family trip. We just had a unique opportunity this summer. We got to visit, we drove in 23 days, we visited 23 states. We drove in our little minivan with our 3 kids 6,000 miles. And we still like each other. I don't know how, but we still do. And thank the Lord for TV and video games. But it went really well. But we got to parts of the country we'd never been to. And one of the places we went to was in Boston. And we got to actually see the Diamondbacks play the Red Sox. And that was really fun at Fenway. But then we went to this place. It's called Union Bay Oyster House. It's the oldest continuing operating restaurant in the United States. And I had there, and I like clam chowder. And I'm not really a connoisseur of anything other than Costco hot dogs, but I do like clam chowder, and I had there the best bowl of clam chowder I have ever had. I mean, it was so good. And then the next day, we had something called a lobster roll, and I had never had a lobster roll before, but lobster and roll, I love bread, I love lobster, you can't go wrong, right? And it's this thick piece of bread, and it was fresh lobster, and I don't know what kind of sauce, but it was so good. I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. But it was so good. And you know, the thing is, and we ate and I was so full. I was just stuffed. I mean it was almost gross how much I ate that day. But I thought, hey, and you know, you ever get this way? It's like, hey, it's vacation. Hey, you know, it's vacation. You're like, honey, you know, you don't fit in your pants anymore. Hey, it's vacation, you know, whatever. So but the thing is, You ever had this where you're so full you think, I will never eat again. That is it. I'm good till at least till next Christmas. I am good. And then like 2 hours later, I'm like, you know, I could go for some ice cream. And I'm like, how did that happen? And Jesus is saying, obviously, any feast you have, any party you go to, as good as it is, as wonderful as it is, it will ultimately not satisfy. And in a couple hours, in a couple days, you're going to be hungry again. You're going to be longing for something again. And Jesus is saying, just like he said to this woman by a well. In John chapter 4, he says, you know what? You drink that water, you're going to get thirsty again. But if you drink the water I have to offer, you will never thirst again. She's like, well, I'd like some of that, Mr. Evian. And he says, that water isn't just liquid. It's me. That feast, the soul longing that you have, that you're trying to satisfy with all kinds of other stuff. He said, what you're looking for, you won't find in all the places you've been looking. Because what you're looking for is me. Augustine, a couple thousand years ago, said it this way. Our souls are restless until they find their rest in God. Because our souls were made for God. Jesus says this party, this feast that he's talking about, it's not just this metaphorical idea. He's talking about himself. And he invites us to himself and to come and find the life we've been looking for in him. And there's two parts, though, to it, because there's two parts to this feast. The first is the now part. And Jesus is, and just to tell you tonight, I mean, just, there's no surprises. This is kind of one of those stories where Jesus, it seems to just sort of call out for us to respond. And I just think we would, you know, be not honoring Jesus if we didn't give you an opportunity tonight to respond. And then no one's going to pressure you or, you know, I joked with the team tonight, we're not going to, you know, have some altar call where we play 80 verses of some song until people come up front or something like that. But I want to tell you right now that there is going to be an opportunity for you in the privacy of your own heart to do honest business with God, because there is an invitation, and it is on the table, and your name is on it. And he says that first, the now part is that there's an offer of life, and that life can only be found in him. I mean, you can be really, really busy, and most of us are, and you can cram your life full of every other thing, and you can be really distracted, and you can have a lot of stuff going, and yet you can still find that way down deep in the moments when you're quiet and there's nobody else around, and you wake up in the middle of the night, and you're thinking those thoughts that you'd rather not think about, that there's an itch inside of you that nothing is scratching. You ever been there? I read this recently. Tom Brady, who is the New England Patriots quarterback, in case you didn't know, and last year he actually by the age of 30, he'd already won 3 Super Bowls, one of the best quarterbacks ever to play statistically. But not long ago, he was interviewed by Steve Kroft on 60 Minutes, and he said, "Wow, you know, he got fame. He was married to a supermodel. He's got money more than he could ever spend." He said he still felt like something was missing in his life. This is his words. "Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still feel like there's something more out there for me? I mean, maybe a lot of people would say, hey, this is what it's all about. I reached my goal, my dream, my life. Me, I say it's got to be more than this. This can't be all it's cracked up to be." And he pressed Steve Kroft, said, "What do you mean? You know, what more is there?" And his answer is this. "What's the answer? I wish I knew. I love playing football. I love being quarterback for this team. But at the same time, there's a lot of other parts about me that I'm trying to find." And I think that, you know, Jesus would love to sit down with Tom Brady, and he'd love to sit down with you. And he is, in fact, if you will listen, saying, "Hey, there's a party. There's an invitation. And the thing that you're most looking for that you can't find anywhere else, no matter how good your job is going or how well your family is coming along or what your relationships look like or how nice your house is or how great a vacation you took or whatever it is. And that those places that are a soul level that the things of this world just can't seem to scratch." And Jesus is saying it's that kind of party. And there's a not yet part to this party. And I want to be really honest, because I know a lot of you here tonight are followers of Jesus, and you love Jesus, and you know that he already has, in many ways, he's already has begun to and still does satisfy some of the deepest parts of you. And yet, I want to kind of confess that sometimes as Christians, we're not really honest, even with each other. Because I've been following Jesus for a long time, and I've known him for a lot of years, and there are still moments, as closely as I walk with him, and as wonderful as it is to be in relationship with him, there are still moments in life that are hard, and there are still moments in life that there's a longing for more. And let me give you an example. A week ago, I did a thing took half a day, called it a quiet day, got alone with God, and it had time in reading the Bible and time in prayer, time in solitude. And I'm not naturally a person that likes solitude, but kind of cultivated that practice, and I had just this really wonderful time with God. I mean, it really was. I mean, it felt like he was sitting next to me on the bench. It felt like he was just as close as the next breath. I felt like he was just whispering in my ear, "Richard, I really like you." And I knew he had to love me because he loves everybody, but he actually seemed to be saying, "I like you," which was stunning. And it was just really one of those great moments. And yet, it lasted a little while. And then, you know, I find myself, then life kicks in, and then the week goes on, and then stuff gets in the way. And let's just be honest, there's still a part of us, even as closely as we walk with Jesus, there's times we get to where we just feel like, man, can't just this last? Can't it, you know, why does other stuff have to always get in the way? Or why do I get in my own way? Why do I get far from God? Why do I keep making mistakes and blowing it? And there's a part of us that longs for the not yet, and that's the eternal feast, if you will, the party that will never end, that we will go to be with Jesus one day. And when we're with him face to face, all the distractions and all the junk and all that will be gone. That deep soul longing that for uninterrupted connection with Jesus, it will happen. That's the great news. The tough news is between now and then, we'll have our moments, and my desire is to have longer and longer moments, and they keep going. But the truth is, the real truth is, we'll have this life, this side of eternity, it will be challenging. There will be those moments that are, you know, that are not always perfect. And we got to be honest with each other about that and keep nudging each other to keep connecting with Jesus in the meantime. But But there's this reality that even though this invitation is there, and even though I'm saying to you tonight that Jesus is willing and able to satisfy the deepest longing of your soul, that longing for purpose and meaning, that longing for connection with something beyond yourself, that longing for just the, you know, fellowship. I don't know, this relationship with the one who created you. And you're made for it, and I know that. But even though you might, in your, you know, outwardly tonight say, sure, I believe that, here's the other part of the story, the other main idea of the story. It's real simple. We will still find lots of reasons to not accept Jesus' invitation. Sometimes even really lame ones. One of the whether it's at an initial rejection or even on an ongoing way. I have had lots of opportunities to have conversations with people about God, and I just feel like one is I don't want to ever be intrusive with people. I mean, people need to be willing to have the conversation, but I find it's really interesting when people are interested in having a God kind of conversation. And I talked to them, and you may have experienced this, where I say to people, do you believe there's a God? Lots of people, most people. In fact, 94% or higher of people in America today say, yeah, I believe there's a God. Second, do you really believe that when you die physically that you'll go on living? You know what? 90-some% of people say, yep, I believe that. I think that's true. Do you think there's a heaven out there? Yeah, I think there is. A little fuzzy on what's that like, you know, party with my friends. I don't know. What's it like? I don't know. But I think there's a heaven. Then you say, what do you think heaven's entrance requirements are? What does it take to go there? Now it gets really murky. And what I find the most fascinating and most troubling of all of it is this. Most folks would say, I don't know, and I don't want to think about it. That's kind of an amazing thing to me. I mean, if eternity is a really long time and you're going to spend a really long time there, wouldn't it make sense to kind of think that through? But it seems like it's really more normal than not for most people to say, I don't know, I'll figure it out when I get there. Well, what if waiting till you get there is too late? Or what if by postponing that whole opportunity to respond to the invitation Jesus lays out means that you miss out in so much of this life on the real life that Jesus wants to offer you? What if that's true? It's really interesting. And so we're not that different. Most of us are not that different than the people in Jesus' story. And the great thing is Jesus is not satisfied with saying, well, you don't want to come to my party? Too bad. I'll eat all the food myself. In fact, he goes out and says, well, then go get other people. Go get anybody else that's sitting around, they're invited too, and there's still room. He says, so go find people that are crippled and blind and poor and all that kind of people that would never get invited anywhere else. And by the way, there's sort of something in that for you. If you're a follower of Jesus, he's talking to you and I too, saying, hey, there's always more room at the Jesus party. There's always more room to invite other people. And remember, don't forget, it's a party. It's not a funeral. And so many people get really, you know, they don't want to come to church because to them it seems more like a funeral than a party. And you guys have this, I think you're doing this really great here, but because this place seems a lot more like a party than a funeral, and that's really good. But he's saying to you and I, hey, there's an invitation. And even though you may find lots of excuses, here's an opportunity. And I'm, like I said, I'm one of those people that I don't like putting people on the spot. I'm not a heavy-handed kind of person. But I think that this story, if we didn't, we wouldn't be doing justice to what Jesus was saying if we didn't say, hey, there is a party. You're invited. Jesus is the one doing the inviting. And he has something for you, both now and in eternity, and it's life, and it's him. It's him. And maybe you've been in a place in your life where you've ignored the invitation, or you've put it off, or you're curious, and you want to know more, or whatever it is, but you've been either procrastinating, you've been just pushing Jesus, trying to keep him at arm's length, and yet he's in a loving way, he kind of keeps being insistent. Or maybe you've been a follower of Jesus for a long time, but Jesus, you know, following Jesus doesn't feel like much of a party anymore. It feels like a duty. feels like a job. And Jesus is saying, don't you remember, this is supposed to be you and I enjoying one another, sitting down at a meal together as friends. Have you forgotten what that's like? And Jesus wants to offer that invitation. I want to just read this little statement by C.S. Lewis. He said this: when you think about our desires and you think of our longings, he says, our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We're half-hearted creatures. We're fooling around with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered to us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of vacation at the sea. We're far too easily pleased. But the simple thing is this: until we get dissatisfied enough with where we've been, we probably aren't going to be ready to receive the invitation that Jesus is offering for something more. A real simple, little dumb thing, but let me say it. Like I said, I went on vacation, and as we were looking through our vacation pictures, I noticed that around my waist, it was getting really pudgy. I mean, every picture, it was like, I can't even suck it in anymore. It's just getting bigger. Until I got dissatisfied with that, I really wasn't willing to change the way I ate, really wasn't willing to go to the gym, wasn't really willing to respond to, you know, health invitation to do something different. Health, not hell. And I just want to say, in a far more important way, in an infinitely more important way, Jesus is saying to you and I, have a party. It's life. I want to invite you to know me, Jesus is saying. To know me, and that's where life really is. And don't keep putting him off. Don't keep putting him off, because you just may be, I'm confident that we are, if you're putting him off, missing out on what life is really all about. Would you just pray with me? And again, I'm not going to ask you to do anything even externally at all, just so if you're worried about that, you don't need to. But perhaps, not because of my words, but maybe just because God just is sort of in this kind of insistent, quiet voice in your heart, is saying, you know, there is something, and there is someone that Jesus himself is saying, hey, here I am. I am the way, and I am the truth, and I am the life, and I want to know you, and I want you to know me, more importantly. And if you're at that place where maybe you've not responded to that invitation, maybe it's time. You might pray. There's no magic words. There's no, God knows what's going on in our hearts, but maybe it would be something like this. In your own hearts, to say, Jesus, I believe you. I choose to believe you. I choose to follow you. I choose to accept your invitation to this party. I don't know what it even fully means yet, but I know that I need you. I need you to invade my life. I need you to forgive my sin, because I know I can't do it on my own and I'm not good enough. But I ask you to do that very thing that you said you would. I ask you to come in and make a difference in my life. I want you to lead my life. And if that's something you pray tonight, then what this church would love to do is to just support you in whatever way they could. There's a card you could check that you just pray that someone will be in contact with you, not to bother you, but just to help you. There's these packets down here at the front that you could take, and if you just put a name on the sheet and email, just so they could just be a support however they can, but those are available for you. But maybe you're here tonight and you say, well, I'm following Jesus. Why does it not feel like a party? Why does it not feel like a feast? Maybe Jesus' his invitation is to come further in, get closer. Get closer to him, till you're looking him right in the eyes and say, let's sit down together. Let's be together. Jesus, we want to take you at your word tonight and believe you, that you have a great invitation, and we want to be with you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
As Richard said, if there's something that caused you to make a move in your heart tonight towards Jesus, we would love to know about that. And if you could just, on the back side of your card, make a note there so that we can respond to you in a way that would be meaningful and meet your needs, we would ask you to do that. We're going to move now into a time of our worship where our members and regular attenders can give back in response to God as a way of worship through their tithes and their offerings. Your envelope and your bulletin, if you want to take that out and take just a moment to fill that out, you can drop it in the offering bag when it comes by. If you're a visitor or a guest, I just want to encourage you to take these moments right now to fill out that card. You can drop it in the offering bag, or I would encourage you to take it out to our patio on your way out. If you take it to our guest connections table, they'd love to give you a free CD of our worship band. We'll take a few minutes, and then our ushers will come forward. Come forward at this time. Take my moment, say